textual and I prepared it without any of my work in it, so it's not what I usually do as talks, but let's see how it goes. I don't know, I expected less people from Venezuela to be here, so maybe for them it might be a bit known what I'm gonna say, but for the rest it should be interesting at least. This context of the history of Caracas, I'm gonna show it a bit with images. This is a very image-based talk. Okay, so we could say that Caracas started growing from a couple of oil-related things happening. One is the discovery of many oil wells, and the other is the nationalization of them. Well, first coming the multinationals, and then starting to nationalize them. So there are moments in the 50s and 70s when there's a lot of money coming in, and maybe recently also there's another of these moments, but always oil-related. So we have in the 40s a rural city becoming a modern one, and the 50s in the hands of many very good architects, one of the which is Villanueva, that I'm going to speak a bit more later. The whole center has been developed. This is from the 50s as well, the redevelopment of the whole center. When you see this, Villanueva did many buildings where he was referring and saving the colonial heritage, but then also making very modernist things which didn't have much to do with the history. Like in this top image here, you can see that he kept the arches and the corridors in the streets, but then at the same time there was this big mall next to it. And in those days, maybe Venezuela was in the eyes of especially the United States and Europe as well for as an attractive country, maybe like Brazil would be for many people in years after that. This is from an American magazine. It's a funny characterization of what the country was depicted as. 1954, you see architects like Gio Ponti going to work in Venezuela for private clients. There's a book there on Ponti's architecture, and this is kind of the spirit of those years. In some areas of the city, a very forward-looking design and mixed with art, where Ponti was himself mixing both things, because to me he's a great artist and designer and architect, but he was also leaving place in this home for artworks. So it's a spirit that I always want to kind of save, which is one of the architect calling in designers and artists to work together. And the main example for that is Villanueva's university city or university campus in Caracas. The site will be this semi-jungle, which has a little mountain, which is became afterwards the botanical gardens. And it's a very long project that starts in 1944 and in the middle of dictatorship, which was a very fruitful dictatorship as it concerns of developing roads and developing most of the infrastructure in the whole of Venezuela. After Pérez Jiménez, is the name of the dictator, there was very little made, and most of the monuments and the urban art that we cherish now was made, unfortunately, during those years and not anymore after. So as I say, that there is this botanical gardens and this natural beauty in the site, and then there's, like you see in that image there, this is kind of trying to organize but not deny that nature. This is in the university, in the campus. This is the main square with this very famous clock now in clock tower in the city. And as you can see, there's a lot of space, not only murals, not only walls, flat walls to make art, but there's other places that were thought in the plans of the architect to be filled with art. And in some cases, very they invited international artists, not only local ones. Alejandro Otero would be one of the main local artists at the time, not particularly making much urban art or big pieces in architecture, but he was invited by Villanueva to make some works on the walls. This is the library of the engineering faculty. This is the architecture faculty, and also the wall was designed by the facade, the side facade was designed by Otero. This is a mural by Mateo Manaure next to the main library. And there is a very nice work, could say a bit taken from Corbusier, of this brissolet, these bricks that let the light in and the air in, but they are not blocking the views. So there's many plays with these kind of bricks, like here. At the end, there's a list of all the references, so everything that's written will appear at the end of the talk. There were also some figures of previous art in Venezuela that were kept and were invited also to this big project. This is all contemporaneous in 1950, we could say. A beautiful mural by Wilfredo Lam, which is a bit hidden because it's inside one of the faculties. And this is probably the most famous piece, which is by Alexander Calder. And he's been quoted as saying that it was the most important piece he ever did. And these plaques have an acoustic function as well as an aesthetic one. And this is in the main hall in the university. Since for like 10 years, it has been nominated, or it has been elected as a cultural heritage from UNESCO. But it was partly to save some of the art being a bit run down. So that meant some money came in, but it's probably not enough to keep it. So it's in a way it needs some help, this campus nowadays. These are two local artists, Navarro and Manaure, making murals in the style of other international artists who were invited, like Bassarelli and Leger. And this is in a very beautiful area that's called the Outdoor Exhibition Plaza or something like that, in the middle of the whole campus. From this university, I pass a bit more to the present now. And what I normally like to say is that there is a kind of subconscious abstract idea in every citizen of Caracas that maybe is reflected in the popular art, as you can see in the buses that run across the city. Every time I go, every year, there's a new model being added, and there's developments on all designs, older designs. This is totally anonymous. I went once to meet one of the painters, and I mean, if you research, you can find out who did it and why, but they are mainly anonymous. And then there's still there's a special interest in the government, because in the years of from the 50s until the 80s, there was a lot of backing from every single government to the optical artists, of which the main ones were Soto and Cruz Diez. So from then on, there's still a lot of interest. Each government wants to leave a mark on the artists they invite, and the city has been touched by these artists. And this is one of the most recent one by Ravelo. It's a very long mural along a main avenue. It's almost like a highway inside the city. But there's also a lot of damage being done. And these buildings are from Villanueva as well. And they were supposed to be a new city for workers. But as you can see, one, they never got finished because the dictator that ordered and that organized and promoted them fell. And then in the middle, instead of parks and common spaces, a favela grew. And there were a lot of projects like this Cruz Diez being invited to decorate the sides of this river that became rather like a more metal on the sides of the sewage of the city, which is the river that crosses it. When the project nowadays should be actually to cover it and make it what it is, which is a sewage, not a river, because it's impossible to clean. This is the whole city, dirty water going. But this was once one of the longest artworks in the world, this side piece there that you can see by Cruz Diez. Cruz Diez did also some very beautiful projects. Some of them are still up and very importantly, being a kind of face of the cities. For example, this is not in the city. This is the airport that will receive you if you went to Venezuela, to Caracas. And this is in inland. These are turbines for an electric plant. And this is probably one of the most beautiful interactions between an artist and an industry that I've known of. And here you can start to see some kind of change. This piece by Cruz Diez started to fall apart something like 7 years ago. And there inside there is a mural. Next to this piece there was a Cristobal Colón statue, which was after all the images of people knocking down Saddam Hussein statues. They also put a rope on Colón and knocked him down. And this plaza was destroyed for many years. But in Venezuela it's typical that then they will redo it, like it happened with this Rafael Soto piece. People stole the metal to just recycle the copper and the aluminium that it was made of. But then 5 years after, the government remakes it with money from the oil and very big banners would say that that's oil money being shared for the people, blah, blah. And then they have to put a wire and electric fence around it. God knows what will happen with it, but this is a country like you can see in this quote. It's in Spanish, but I left it as a whole, but I'm going to explain the main idea. The idea is that it's a mining country, and the mining countries are not countries but campments. So you go there, you take all the resources, and then you move somewhere else. It ends up saying that Venezuela has never created its laws, maybe because the laws that it should create should rather be rules, not laws, just like you would find in a hotel room. José Ignacio Cabrujas was one of the main writers for soap operas. So he was a theater person, very cultured person, who went to make some, maybe surviving money in the TV industry, making soap operas. Very respected nonetheless. And this is from a little booklet that you will find there, from an exhibition by Julieta González. Julieta is now the Tate Modern advisor for Latin American art. And she did this project where in this long avenue that I showed before that had the repetitive mural, she found that as a, or she spoke about that as a, that crosses the city, yeah? And the city is totally divided. And she found that as an example of what's happening in the city. On one side you will see these kind of murals that depict the history or are very educational or just patriotic in a very basic sense. And on the other side, you will find this abstract word that is maybe also a little bit out of place. But they're both sides are trying to pull to their own sides. And this division, I want to express it with this very interesting story of the logos of the museums. For all the Venezuelans, these are very familiar designs. These are from Fine Art Museum, Contemporary Art Museum. I forgot what that one at the bottom is, but that one is National Gallery. The names of the designers, some of them are also artists, and this is the spirit of the Bauhaus, Tropical Bauhaus, that I was quoting, because when I started in this graphic design school in the, what, in the 89, I didn't know what I wanted to be, but normally all people who wanted to be artists or who had some kind of tendency, they would go to a graphic design school, or to the architecture school, or to the history of art school, because there was no art as such. So Loifer, for example, he's a very important painter as well. Valesca Belisario is only a designer, but these are also other logos. And these logos were changed last year for a single logo. Like, just passing the whole history of these institutions through this very narrowing idea of what the country that they want it to be. So it's a foundation of national museums, and then a single logo which comes from a kind of indigenous image. And all of them the same. So centralization. And the main excuse with this thing, with these changes in the museums, is that they were led by an elite. The elite, maybe, that elite that was once running all these museums and institutions, has now to kind of close themselves in some areas, in some private areas, or maybe leave the country in a revolution that is not working. And I can put many examples of that, but Chavez himself has said last week that all the hospitals, that is maybe the main idea of that in foreign countries they respect of him, that he put doctors in the favelas. Well, he said that 2,000 of these places are not working, simply not working. So the old hospitals are not working, and the new ones either. So you start, it's not like in Sao Paulo where you see the images of the buildings and the swimming pools next to the favelas. These are all vertical favelas and horizontal ones. These are very beautiful pictures by Carlos Herman Rojas. To introduce a little bit of these other things happening in Caracas now, because the museums, there's no more collections, there's no more books being published. And the shows, last time I went in the Fine Art Museum, there was a show about Emiliano Zapata. So about revolution in different countries. This is a video by Lucia Pisani. I'm going to start showing artworks now. This maybe reflects a little bit what is happening and this enclosing of the people and insecurity in the country. This is taken from real estate or estate agents advertising. So normally when people want to sell a place, one of the pictures they will put, like here they will put the picture of the bathroom or the views, like here they will put the security that they have in place. Thank you. things you realize when you are far away for a while, and then you look at it and you can compare it to what happens in different places. It's not meant to be so sad, this talk, so let's see if we can. It's terrible. Okay, where are we? Some of this elite that was running the museums for some time, they have secluded themselves in this space, which is called Centro de Arte Los Galpones, which has some private galleries and some... They become like a kind of Kunsthalle, because they are like a little bit more like museums, but without the collection. And they have a strong backing of people with really lots of money, who just want to see things happening. Maybe because they don't go to the museums anymore. So these are the spaces, and this is the kind of crowd. This was a reenactment of a performance by Alfred Benemoser, who's an Austrian artist who lived in Venezuela for many years, where he, in 1981, he buried himself up to the head, like a harvesting. So he did it with some curators and artists that are running the place. But it's like a little family, really, because there's, imagine a country where there's absolutely no middle ground. There's a lot of poor people, and there's maybe 5% of not poor people, and some of them awfully rich. And this is another space of which you will see some material there. The magazine Pulgar is run by Luis Romero, and this is Oficina Número Uno with Luis Romero and Suwon Lee. This is Pulgar magazine. He was invited to document in Kassel, the last one, to present their magazine. And this is a work that is very emblematic. It was actually, you say, it was censored at some point by Chavez Gorman from somewhere, some museum show. But it shows. Outside is a typical favela house, and inside is a little middle class room, very polished and painted. And it was a remake of his own room, Meyer Weisman's room. It's a very beautiful piece from the 90s, 90 what? 92 or something. And this is work by Alexander Apostol, who looks at the organic architecture of these houses and of many different demonstrations of the architecture in Caracas. And he works them to make these kind of sculptures. Apostol lives in Spain as mayor of Weisman also. I kind of started researching on people that I knew, and there's a lot of work using bricks. And then I put some of these together. This is more recent work by Weisman. And this is by Ali Gonzalez, he's a very interesting artist, but who changes very strongly from one series to the other. And you never know where he's going to carry on working. Very the maverick. These are people who have always have shows in this in Galpones. There's at the moment there's 6 spaces running exhibitions every month. So there's a lot of activity. They don't have a website yet, but there's a couple of blogs that mention all the shows. This is work by Luis Romero, who's running that Oficina Número Uno space. This is called Sleepless, something like that. More work. About the city maybe being run down or having a history and not and I'm losing it. It's Daniel Medina, who represented Venezuela in the Venice Biennale in the last one. Not with this work. And amidst other four artists in a group show that wasn't really very successful, because the artists didn't have anything to do between them. That's not very well explained. It's more Daniel Medina in one of the spaces in Los Galpones. And I wanted to, in this overview, I want to show as well some older artists. Eugenio Espinosa is he was my teacher in Caracas, but he must be near 60 now. And he always works around this grid. Even in recent years, he likes to work about redoing his own work. Very interested in repetition. And recently, he's also interested in this representation of painting. If you read it poetically, this can also mean how this kind of monochrome modernist painting becomes some kind of fake thing that is trying to be held up by some very precarious instruments. He lives abroad as well for many years, but you could read it politically as well. There's an exhibition in Miami, in one of his galleries. This piece by Ivan Candeo, who was shown in, is like a Homer van, but it's worked in such, it reminds me of Apostol's photographs of the houses being covered up. It's just wood and very basic materials. Very recent exhibition at Oficina Numero Uno. I forgot the name. What was the name of this? Enrique Moreno, also in Oficina Numero Uno, with these machines. This machine, it doesn't have any pen or anything, but the same wire marks the walls or the paper. And this is my favorite painter of all times in Venezuela. It's called Luis Salazar. What you can read there, it's amazing, huh? You don't laugh, but it says Latin American artist is a fucked up artist. Well, the majority of them, that's what it says. It's a kind of naive, punk, out of place painting, but he's the most creative and active guy in this scene to me. He copies everything that he sees. He's an absolute consumer of images and vomits the images that he consumes. That's him on the top there. I was looking for images. I did this series, I didn't know, and it's just amazing. I want to see this painting, so I'm looking forward to visiting him next month that I'm going to be in Caracas. And he would kill me if he saw this, but there's a history in Venezuela of all the collections having in the same level naive artists and outside art and maybe indigenous art together with contemporary art, very modern and very figurative with abstract. Everything is mixed up because it's such a small country. But this is a tradition also shared by Brazil, for example, where some collections are very wide. The main example would be the Cisneros collection, which has a very important indigenous. They are like the British Museum of Venezuela, basically. They collect everything. But this image reminded me of this one, so it's a good way to link the first modern painter of Venezuela, Armando Reverón, who was only recently recognized, maybe a bit more internationally, in a show he had at MoMA couple of years ago. Reverón came to study in Barcelona and in Paris in the time of the Impressionists or post-Impressionism. But when he went back to Venezuela, he realized that the light that he saw in Europe was not the same light, so he started painting everything almost blinding white. And he went to live near the coast in a mountain where you could see the sea. And he started making these models to paint because he was sometimes very alone and he needed models. And he made all the things that went around the paintings, you know. He needed some flowers, he would make them. And some people have related this work, which is 1940s, 1930, end of 1930s, 40s, and 50s, to the way the vibration of the light happens in, for example, in Soto. He used a lot of yellow Soto in these bars, cinetic works, so they relate this to this work, which is called From My House, From My Shack. So you can see these bars and the light coming through the wood. Or the palm trees. And it's also, I would like to relate this image to the first that we saw from the architecture of the university, letting the light shine through. And now that we're talking about artists who ended up their lives selling lots of work but not in a very good condition health-wise, Bárbaro Rivas is a more urban art. You could say that Reverón went to live near the beach, so it was less urban. But Bárbaro Rivas lived and drank a lot in the city, in the east of the city. And he was collected madly by many people, but he didn't even know that he was. I mean, he had enough money to live and live okay, but that's another story, how people take advantage of painters. But he's a genius. He's really interesting. In a way, I mean, we should be grateful that people discovered Bárbaro and collected him. But because in some countries, maybe such geniuses get totally live and die unseen. He had a lot of religious subjects and popular stories painted. There's quite a lot of his work on the internet because there's a lot of book published. But this was contemporaneous with some optical artists coming back, like Otero, coming back to Venezuela from Paris. So it was very interesting, 50s. See, that's Otero, and that might be contemporary with this. And collected by the same collectors. So that's a characteristic of Venezuelan collections. Definitely contemporary to this 1950s Cruz Diez. Made with cardboard, it looked a bit precarious still. Then he started working with aluminium and other, and the peak of the technology, and he still is. Okay, so we. This, okay, the idea is that I speak about optical art and I speak about Cruz Diaz and Soto, and them being picked up by the governments, by successive governments, as the ones who are going to make all the artworks in the public art in the city. But then there's a lot of artists who were working in the 70s that were maybe more conceptual and less visual, and they have been only very recently rediscovered. There's a lot of performance art and other things. We couldn't find a Pulgar magazine, which was devoted to women art and to performance in those years. But there's a few names here if you want to research a bit more. There's some. This was a performance in London, actually, by Diego Barbosa, with these women walking with these nets over their heads. Very funny pictures. And maybe the one that's been more rescued recently is Claudio Perna. There's a book of his there, which is called Social Art. He was probably the most interesting artist in leaving the city. He's maybe our own Oiticica, you could say. A lot less visual, a lot more about leaving the city, using a lot more photography, but it's the same kind of spirit of leaving the city. There's a foundation now to rescue all the heritage and all the archive of Perna, but it's also quite difficult because sometimes you don't know what was meant to be an artwork and what was only a document of something that he lived. Pedro Terán, this kind of very 70s performance mixed with the document of the performance. Pedro Terán is still active today, and from time to time you can see some older work that the curator would like to show in relation to some newer work, of which this is a new work. This is called Casas de Oro. He did it in, I think it's around Maracaibo. And one represents a black gold of the oil. It was a house painted all in black, and the other one was all covered with gold leaves. And then he made a lot of work around it, you know, also in maybe in a very 70s spirit. Lots of documents, and then the documents became works by themselves, but I couldn't find the picture of the houses as such. This is a work by Nello Ochoa, which was about the... I'm starting to show some women art, but this was maybe a response of a very machistic society in Venezuela. And these women are inside the boxes, real women. And when people insert coins in the boxes, they can request a fluid, and then they would receive some mucus, or some, or what else was it? Saliva. What, tears? They look like dolls, yeah, the whole idea is that they look like dolls. And they had this kind of TV presenter introducing the dolls inside the boxes. This is a more recent work by Nella Ochoa with these are x-ray of people who've been killed by bullets, an installation in one of the museums in the 90s. Antonieta Sosa, she's been teaching in Reverón School for many years, and she's been really influential in younger, especially female artists. She always knows what is going on, and she knows what happened also in the past. And her work had a lot to do with her own body, and she used a lot of chairs. So the collection of images I put here had chairs as a common theme. On the last one, she's actually knitting some Venezuelan flag, which brings me to this piece by Juan José Olavarría, burnt flag. And this other work, which is a painting of one of the bridges that, after many years of being in a very bad condition, fell. But it was a very mediatic thing of the... all sides of society kind of looking at the bridge going to fall to take advantage of the story, or to see it as a kind of symbol of the government, when in reality this bridge has been damaged for many years. But in fact, this bridge was built by the dictator I was talking about in the 50s. So it was one of the most advanced highways of its time, and it just felt like 3 years ago. I have another, sorry?
You have to say it's the connection.
Yeah, it's the connection between the city and the airport, yes. And for many years, this connection was made by a very small road, and it was completely chaotic. I want to show now a video by Consuelo Méndez. I'm going to show it halfway, because it's a performance. Consuelo Méndez is one of these older artists. And in this video, this video is about the lots of rain that fell on the side of the mountain. It was a terrible thing happening in 2000. Lots of people died, and the government still never acted properly and never rebuilt many of the towns and never gave housing to people who survived. And in this one, she sings the anthem. Now this very kind of nationalistic area of the talk. She sings the anthem while drinking, almost dying in the attempt. She's in the hall, like, you know, the anthem has like the most popular one that everybody sings, and then there's like three more pages, but she sings the whole thing. She opened a festival of performance and with this piece, and it was amazing to see her live there. Everybody who saw it remember it, like. Okay. This is a younger artist, Deborah Castillo, who was a student of Antonieta Sosa and absolutely loves Antonieta Sosa's work. This was a show in the Cubicle Gallery in Pablo León de la Barra space in Hoxton. She works always with her own body, with photography, and lately also with the immigration issues. Esperanza Mayobre also did, she has a kind of different work, but I'm showing this one. She, with her name being Esperanza, she always plays with that, so she created this, her own image as a virgin, and in these candles, and she's holding the passport with the green card and some money in her hand. So she lives in the States. This is a series with a lot of heads of state thanking Esperanza for all the hope that she gives them. And in this kind of area where I'm talking about artists who are not in the country anymore, there is this probably a very famous piece by a Venezuelan in the border of Mexico and the United States. Javier Tellez did this bullet man, you call it, from that you see in the circus. He was also holding his passport in the hand when being flying over the border of Mexico to the States. A very beautiful piece. This was during the, what, Tijuana? Sorry?
Inside,
yeah, it was a kind of workshop where the artist did something specifically in that area of Mexico, of the border. And I want to finish with a piece that is not by a Venezuelan, but I just love it. This is he bought this little book by Emma Kay of the story of art, where she lists the names that she remembers from memory of artists. And imagining that he knows already all the names that she knows, he also adds names of Latin American artists. So I think it's a very beautiful piece. Especially for an Argentinian, for me, Argentina feels so far away, and it's really upsetting that there's no more presence of Argentinian artists. But anyway, this is about Venezuela, but I could say the same of Venezuela. And these are some references, and maybe I can show what I had after this. I have some of my work after, so I'll go back to the references and I'll show you some pictures. I only have 5 or 6 pictures, but this is a recent installation in Bloomberg, where I took over the 7 floors of the space inside, not only the gallery space, which is at the bottom. And it was a work which was mostly for the workers inside the offices. So they also a change happening. And this was my first show in Riflemaker in the old space in Soho. Some single paintings. And this was the first time I used vinyl on windows in this installation for the Architecture Biennale in this was in Cheapside in near St. Paul's. And this is a work I did for this was a kind of workshop in the border between Argentina, Paraguay and Brazil in the area of Foz, of Iguazu waterfalls. There's three towns there that communicate, and there's a lot of traffic between the countries, especially because there's a lot of goods entering illegally in Paraguay, and then they smuggle them to, like, goods. You can say they're goods for sale, but also drugs and guns and computers, anything you name. So there's a lot of motorcycles doing the route as taxis. So if you, for example, you buy some computers in Paraguay and you go and sell them in Brazil, you'll make some money. So if you make the journey 10 times, the fastest way is to do it on a motorcycle, because there's a lot of queue always on the bridge. So I wanted to work with the motorcyclists, and I did this playing with the letters of the word taxi, because they are not identified. I also let them play with the four stickers to decorate their helmets, and in the end I exchanged their old helmets for new ones that I decorated myself. So there's a common thread of this vinyl thing, sticky, but that's an interest of my work. Okay, and this is the most recent show in Switzerland, in Winterthur. It's open now. When you leave, you can go, maybe. So it's an installation in two rooms. One of the rooms has a poster that also, when I cut it, I can create different patterns and the paintings on top. And then the other room has a wall painting designed especially for the space, which is a very high space with this very old kind of trompe l'oeil ceiling. And this refers to what you were saying about playing with the architecture, with the paintings. Okay, and this is the list again. Okay. Thank you. That's it. Yeah, sure. That's the idea. The Venezuelans in the crowd. Yeah. Doing, but then having the context of the country or of the continent. So it's kind of really unfortunate. If you take only Venezuela as an example, there was a time when the currency was so high that people would come with grants and study here, but then they would go back. Like, you know, they would be really rich here. They remember people living in hotels and just having a studio as well, and, you know, with the grant from the government. And also you have to, you know, the times have changed a lot, and now, you know, even if a country is doing really well, people might be living anywhere, visa and all that permitting. So the better the country goes, the better open doors they have in a different country. There's different kind of immigration as well. In Venezuela has always been a country of money, so the migrants will be students who stay and not really like ground workers who go and work of anything and try to send money back to their families. So different countries have different things. But I do hope that in my lifetime there will be a lot of people going back and working, but I see that's quite unlikely, not because the country is going to change much, but because people have also made their lives in different places. And you can see already the influence of people leaving and going back, and the work being done influencing the local one, and things changing in the law in the original country, so the work can be shown. It's fluid. It should be fluid. Yeah, the main problem would be people from the main centers and from Europe and the States going to do groundwork and to know the place in Latin America. That's not happening so often. And that's happening more in Brazil, for sure. People don't really know how important some people are outside, yeah. Really, in the local scene. I don't know. And the Cisneros are also very kind of hidden now in Venezuela because of, you know, they cannot criticize the government because they might get nationalized. But also, you know, they have still businesses running, so there's not much been said about Cisneros inside, and it's just a reflection of what the country was, that all these people are in the Tate committee, you know, that's old money. Maybe there's a catalog there of the collection.
So much money, but the money doesn't get to the artists. So artists have to go to apply for grants outside the country or in other ways. There are private collectors buying, but not looking for my collection. Thank you.
Yes, but for some, there's many things mixed in the answer, but for Mexican artists and for Brazilian artists, it's a lot easier to kind of use local things in their works and be still treated as contemporary artists in from the like the global pot. Because I remember this in this talk, were you there when Taina Karagol was saying that what if you are in the States, you don't want to be labeled as a Latino artist. That would be the worst that could happen to you. So you, sometimes you even have to try to not say where you're from and just make work and try to be a mix with the locals in a way. And then also a very interesting thing that happened in that talk, that there was this woman from Christie's, and she said that when an artist in an auction in Christie's reaches a certain point and certain kind of clients, they would move him from the Latin American auction to the contemporary art auction. So, you know, you have to try to not... Latin American art would always be a lot less money than the other one. So a lot less recognition, a lot less of everything. And some countries have got it better, like I said, Brazil and Mexico maybe. And of course, you do go back and you take, you know, it's so rich, and here it's sometimes so boring what's happening, and what you can see on the street is just a, one week in wherever in Latin America. It doesn't have to be your own country; it can give you 4 years of work. But yeah, it happens. There was a very in the Brazilian exhibition in last week in the Brazilian embassy. What's the name of the collector?
Stuart Evans.
He said a very nice thing that I love, and I will quote him from now on every time that I can. He said that I could say that I can speak from both sides now because I've been here for many years. And I realized this only by being here. But in Venezuela, you have all these old masters, and you are, you know, you are working and having them on the back, and but you respect it and you like it, and even they respect you. But in here, there's a fear. There's first the youth is so, you know, the pop culture and the culture of the youth is so extended that you feel that you are old if you're 30. And also you have to make something new all the time, you know, because there's this pressure of the new. And that doesn't happen there. And you can be just making work that starts from somebody who was working in the preceding decades and just like continuing it without any pressure or any problem. And I think that's very important for a kind of relaxed state of mind in the studio. But I don't really realize this by being here, and then the other day he put words to it, Stuart Evans. Let's have a look at some books that I brought there, if you want.
I have another question, it's a bit kind of specific, but you were talking about the kind of deterioration of collections. Big public collections. In the case of the Otero Museum, does it have a? Is this the place where his work is?
No, not with Otero. Otero, in the museum they have a lot of models for the for the big work that he did. But the main long pieces that I showed here, they are all in private collections, and in different museums they maybe have one of each. What was interesting was with the Soto Museum. He had a museum in Ciudad Guayana that he built, like, you know, in the industrial area where he was born. So he was kind of in a different era of the country. And he had a very nice collection of international art of friends of his. So there was a kind of deal between the government and the family. And some of these works are going back to Europe. But in exchange, the government restored some works and were given the works by that had Soto as the owner, or the foundation as the owner, became part of the state. But then some of the works are just leaving the country because it's...
So the
the action is just taking it, basically. I don't know. There's many, like in the Reverón show, taking some of the works out with the excuse of the MoMA show, that meant some of the works are going to stay outside. There's many of these happening.
There's a wide audience
that people take out. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And you were talking about the Opera Museum. I just want to say that the last exhibition in the Opera Museum was paid by the workers of the museum because they believe in the contemporary art. They wanted to do the show, so everybody of the workers put a bit of money to be able to have the exhibition because it's really falling apart. So it's crazy.
There's a change in the constitution that Chavez wrote. Instead of being only two kinds of property, private and public, there's something like 8 different types of property: communal property and government share blah blah property. So everything in the property side gets diffused, and they're starting to talk about the government taking over some heritage sites, and they might consider, for example, Geoponte's house as a heritage site and just take it. So everyone with this kind of heritage, because they just inherited it, they are really scared.
Do you think that maybe in this country in particular, people, you find when you talk to English people, they understand the political situation in Venezuela?
No. No, but you know, even myself, I might have been, you know, when Bush was in power, Chavez would be the only person saying the truth to his face. But you know, now it's just everything is just falling apart. And he's a military, and you can see that he's a military in everything. It's terrible. Well, some people in this country are still wrong about Pinochet.
But the thing is, art after Pinochet left or was killed, there was still this fear of producing contemporary art, and there was still fear of the way that you said certain things and the reactions that those concepts or those ideas would have because so many people disappeared and
I was thinking about similar thing, but not in terms of Chile, but with Brazil, because Brazil had a big dictatorship, and then after it was a really, like, during, outside, and then after it was a big flourishing. So I expect that kind of thing to happen in Venezuela, because it will be a completely, it will be, in some ways, it will be terrible, because they will just have to redo the whole thing, and we'll do the exactly opposite, and might sell up the country to the first. No. It will be a kind of Romanian fearless thing, totally. yeah, it will be a party, I tell you. It will be, I don't want to imagine, but already some of the Chavista people, they have their second home in Miami, so it'll be the same, it's more like Cuba, you know, it's terrible. They'll meet up in Miami. Opposition and Chavez. No, but in the country it will be okay. It will be party. It's not, you know, it's a tropical country. It's not Chile. It's not Argentina. It's ruleless. It's a camp, like I was saying there. It's like, yes, I forgot to mention, but this one here, El Anexo, and then there's one called Organización Nelson Garrido, or ONG, which is as NGO in English. Nelson Garrido is a photographer, very well known, and he opened his house to have artists in residency, have exhibitions, have classes and courses for everyone. There's another photographer who had a more standardized school, a more organized school called, what's his name? Mata, Roberto Mata. And he also does exhibitions. The place is called La Carniceria, or the meat shop. El Anexo is very interesting, that one there. You can see some of the projects, and they have links to many different places. Los Galpones is more of a kind of private galleries idea. The others are a bit more open and more kind of open to residencies and invite foreign artists to give talks and things. But there are many. There used to be lots of workshops and things, but Oficina, Luis Romero, is the guy who would organize them. Now he's more kind of running Oficina and running the magazine, so he's not doing any more workshops and things.
And has there been any response from the government towards these initiatives, or
no.
Is it very small and sort of hidden within
it's
the art
community? It's hidden. There hasn't been any clash or anything. But also in the space you don't see that they do anything to try and get people from the poorest areas to come and enjoy contemporary art. It's really a very close thing. Sometimes I get a bit upset with them.
Well, so the museums are empty.
The museums are empty?
Art and whatever, but
yes.
They are empty.
Yeah. So it's I had some pictures, but then when I realized that most of it was Caracas, I took them out. But there's an artist that lives in Germany. She goes back every year in May to her hometown in Maracaibo. And she does what is called La Velada Santa Lucia, which is in just one street. They get everyone to open their doors and they do things in their houses. The artists go inside the house and they make things there. So it's very local, very beautiful and very colorful.
What's your
name? Clemencia Labin. L-A-B-I-N. She lives in Hamburg in Germany. And the place is called Santa Lucia. Velada Santa Lucia. I didn't even leave her name here. Like this. Like this. There's some information on the internet, but not much. Thank you.
Woke me up.
No, I didn't.